We ate supper in silence. The low sun smoked the dining room windows with dull light, bathing the room with a beige sheen. The mutton was cold and flaccid. George's jaw worked monotonously, his face embalmed in the glow of the evening, a dull egg of light reflecting on his forehead. He had put his spectacles back on, I noticed, after hours spent soaking them in bleach. He cleared his throat. I saw that the nursery curtains were open. Yes, I said, not looking up from my plate. I was in there a few days ago.
Oh, good, he said. Maybe this would be a good time for us to clear it out, get rid of some of the old stuff so that Mr. Tuttle can go in.
I kept quiet, knowing a response either way would make no difference.
Sure Mr. Tuttle understands these things, George continued. I've seen him laying flowers at the memorial many a time. He's had his share of losses too, no doubt.
Yes, I said.
Well?
Maybe. A posy of violets sat in the middle of the dining room, their stems furred by the yellowed water in George's sherry glass. I stared at them, wondering where they would have come from. Perhaps George had seen the ones left after the garden party had finally wilted and gone to the trouble of replacing them with a fresh bunch. Why would he do that? How unlike him! George positioned his knife carefully on the side of his plate.
I saw the rocking horse yesterday, he said casually.
What?
The one that you gave to that Tinker family.
I know which one, I said. He wiped his mouth slowly, his lips unfurling from the edge of his napkin. I waited for him to fold it carefully onto his lap, the way he always did, one of the little rituals he went through before he was about to say anything important.
I was on call, he said at last. I got sent out to a farm worker's cottage over by Evesbridge. The patient had what looks like tuberculosis. I had to do the test, tuberculin and so forth.
TB, I said. And so near Missensham.
I wouldn't worry yourself, George said. There's little chance of it spreading to the Sunningdale estate. No, this case is most likely isolated and due to the ways of the family quite unsanitary. These deaths by the thousand that the newspapers like to scare us with are mainly confined to urban areas and the poorer populations. As long as you don't catch a chill or associate too much with these people, you'll be quite...
Was the patient a little girl? I said quickly.
A girl?
George shook his head impatiently.
No, no, she was a woman, middle-aged, scrawny-looking thing. I just thought that, as you gave the family the horse, she might know of her.
Maud, I said.
I wouldn't know. Brown, I think the family name was.
Yes, Maud Brown, I said, but he continued, as if he was not interested in my connection.
Looks like she's alone, although she swears otherwise. Says there's a husband, no, a partner. How uncouth. But whoever he is, there wasn't much sign of him. No, that poor woman is struggling to look after five children on her own, I'd say. The little vermin were running about everywhere. The place was in a terrible state. Old cat, thin as a rake, and the rocking horse, the one we used to have, with his tail pulled out. Bit worse for wear from what I could see. Piles of needlework all over the place and red workman's gloves all dried up in buckets. It was like a workshop,
yes.
Like a back street workshop.
Hmm. He nodded to himself as if pleased with his summation. Did you see her? I said quickly.
What?
Did you see the girl?
Girl?
Yes, a girl with a birthmark on her cheek.
No, I didn't see any girl.
There was a silence and we stared at each other, but his expression didn't change. Then he turned back to his meal.
How about green?
Green? For the box room, I don't think it suits those childish pastel colours, and we can paint over the sheep.
The box room? I said. Are you talking about the nursery?
Yes, well, he muttered. We can hardly call it that any more, can we? After all, it never really...
All right, then. I nodded wearily. I'm sure Mr. Tuttle can find a use for the crib. We'll make a gift of it. He'll make good money sold on.
The woman with TB, I said. Mrs. Brown... What will happen to her? He shrugged.
Well, her fate lies in the test, although I'm sure they'll be positive. There's not much doubt when you're coughing up blood. An impoverished woman in her situation will probably end up in the public sanatorium at Meadowfield. There's no issue of quarantine for the moment. She's pretty isolated up there. Plenty of fresh air, too. Children don't seem to stray too far, and they need her at home. There are new treatments, of course, surgical procedures. Bit of a speciality of mine when I was on the pulmonary ward at Oxworth General. Quite fascinating, actually. Involves collapsing the lungs. I shuddered. The prognosis is bleak, though, for someone in her situation. She's probably better off at home, actually. The institutions for the very poor aren't up to much. I would be doing her a favour leaving her where she is. Then he added, and serving on some paperwork. What about chlorodyne? I said. My mother used to say that it helped her aunt when she had consumption. He laughed. Victorian marketing, I'm afraid. That's just the kind of thing I would expect to fool country people. You use it, I said. He tilted his head so the light from the window reflected in his spectacles. Chlorodyne is just a mix of sedatives and opiates. It can help for an old wound such as mine, or it can give brief relief, but it's no cure for TB. Some make it through, but the odds aren't good.